You're listening to HP3R, Higher Power Ranger Recovery Radio. All recovery, all the time. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Today on Recovery Buddies with David, we're going to talk about how sometimes we might feel like an imposter. It is very easy to feel like we don't belong. I think this is one of the natural feelings that comes from insecurity, low self-esteem, and being overly critical of ourselves. When we attend our first OA meeting, many of us come in with such character defects dominating our lives and driving our compulsions to overeat or restrict. But even now, with 407 days of continuous abstinence and hundreds of pounds of weight loss, there are times when I'm attending an OA meeting and I feel like an imposter. Maybe you do too. Sometimes the feeling comes when working the steps in the programs. Then there are those times when that doubt and self-criticism, those old nemesises of ours, flare up again, and it is very easy to think to ourselves, wasn't this supposed to change me? Aren't I supposed to never again doubt myself and criticize myself? Why haven't all my worries and negative thinking left me forever? Shouldn't I be different now and not thinking these thoughts and feeling these feelings? Am I a fraud? An imposter? Well, today we're going to talk about those feelings and situations and see if we can't find another way, perhaps a better way, to deal with feeling like we don't belong. It is best to begin our discussion at the beginning, as in when we first hear about OA and make the decision to attend a meeting. I think there are many of us out there who feel like imposters that first time we sit through the reading and sharing at an OA meeting, regardless of whether we attend the meeting in person or on Zoom. Maybe it is denial that makes us feel that way, or maybe it's a sense of embarrassment and shame. It is very easy to beat ourselves up for being addicts, and it is hard to admit to ourselves, and then to others out loud, that we need help. People tend to think that admitting they have a problem is admitting a weakness, which, for many of us, injures our pride and sense of integrity. But the thing is, even if we don't share our vulnerability and ask for help, that weakness created by our character defects is still going to haunt us and make our lives miserable. The truth is, we have nothing to lose by admitting that we need help and everything to gain. As I see it, the fact that many of us felt like imposters when we first arrived in program is one more thing that we have in common. It is one more weakness that unites us and helps us understand and support each other. As the literature says, the secret to the success of our program is our weaknesses, the sharing of our failings, our fears, our problems. Now that's all fine and good for people who are new to program, but I also know that there are people, like myself, who have been in program for months and years that sometimes feel like imposters. These people are maintaining long lengths of abstinence. They are living in the state of serenity and recovery. So we need to ask the question, why is it that from time to time, these people feel like imposters? Perhaps they experience this feeling when attending a meeting they haven't been to before. I think it's very good for those of us in the program to try new meetings every now and then, just to add some variety to our recovery. And thanks to the internet, there is a lot of recovery to be found out there in online meetings, podcasts like this one, and other online forms of interaction. But just because we don't find recovery in every meeting and interaction within the fellowship doesn't mean that we are imposters. The program is made up of people with diverse personalities from a variety of cultures. It is only natural that some of us get along well and jive together, while others don't quite sync up. Those moments when we are not compatible do not mean that anyone is doing anything wrong. Far from it. In fact, something very right is happening in those instances. We are giving each other the space and the respect that we all deserve so that we can share and speak and build strength together, so that we can heal. It's quite beautiful if you think about it. So many people from so many different places and backgrounds all working together to become better individuals and live happier lives. That truly is a wonderful thought to dwell on, and one that I often turn to when I doubt my place among the fellowship. When we don't sync up with others, it doesn't mean that we are imposters. It just means that that's a space where we won't find recovery. I am a man, and I seriously doubt I would find any recovery in a woman's only meeting, any more than a woman would find recovery in a men's only meeting. In fact, I would bet that my presence at a woman's meeting would be as disruptive and distracting as a woman's presence would be at a men's meeting. Of course, that's a very easy example, so I'll offer another example to consider. As a man who has lived his entire adult life as a morbidly obese person, it is a true statement to say that I have body image thoughts, experiences, and trauma. However, there have been many body image meetings that I have tried and did not feel comfortable in because the readings and the discussions were often centered on the female body and experiences that women have had. There was nothing wrong with the meeting or the people there, but the result was that I just didn't jive. It was not where I needed to be to find my healing and recovery. There are, however, men's meetings that are specifically designed for men with more than 100 pounds to lose, and at those meetings, body image issues, personal hygiene, and the physical limitations that result from being so overweight are prevalent in discussion. And those are the spaces where I do find the recovery and the healing that I need. Both meeting types address similar topics, but in one, I felt like an imposter. In the other, I felt like I belonged. Let's consider another scenario that might make someone feel like an imposter. Perhaps one day you're in a meeting that you depend upon as part of the foundation of your recovery, but the meeting feels different, and you start to wonder, is it the meeting, or is it you? Now you start comparing and contrasting in your thoughts. You ask yourself questions like, am I falling behind the others? Am I a liar? Have I taken a giant step backwards because I'm not doing as well as everyone else is? Those assumptions that include infinitives like everyone are very dangerous and potential tripwires that can send a person spiraling down into a dark pit of worry. I know because I have felt this way from time to time. If there is one thing that the fellowship has taught me, it is that our addictions make us feel like we are alone in how we feel and think, and that feeling of isolation is a lie. None of us can see into each other's hearts and minds and know everything that is going on. Heck, I find it challenging at times to know everything that is going on in my mind and emotions. That's why I know it is important to celebrate the success of others and not use their successes as a measuring stick. I must mark my progress by my own actions and feelings. The fact that I feel better now compared to when I was deep in my addiction is how I mark my success. Of course, there are other ways to mark success, like loss of weight, smaller sizes for clothes, being able to walk up and down staircases easier. Hey, this past weekend, I rode in my mother's car for the first time ever because, guess what? Now I fit. I think it has been more than 6 or 7 years since my mother could drive me anywhere because I was too big for her car and she was too short for my truck. I am currently halfway to my goal weight, and when I reach that goal weight, I know intellectually that I'll be able to fit into almost any car I choose, which in turn will give me a wonderful variety of new experiences to enjoy in the future. But right now, in the present, it is very nice to mark my growth and progress by reclaiming one more experience that I can share with a family member. Maybe one day I'll be riding in my brother's car, and then a few years later, who knows, maybe I'll be a passenger while one of my brother's kids is driving. Now that's an encouraging thought for me, though perhaps a nervous one for my brother. There is a friend I have in program. She's actually the second person I ever spoke with outside of meetings for outreach. And over the last 14 months, she has become someone I can depend on for support and encouragement. She is important to me and my recovery, so much so that you might say she's a founding member of my connection to the fellowship. The green mint cloud that appears on the cover art for HP3R represents her because she has a soft, pleasant voice, and when she curses, I have to restrain myself from giggling because she sounds like a cloud sneezing instead of someone uttering curse words and spitting fire. In those early months, she was someone who I looked to for strength and guidance. She was the person I would whisper questions to when I didn't understand a term or know what page we were reading from in a meeting. At the start of my recovery, she was a mentor. The acceptance and kindness that she offered me is one of the reasons I stuck with the program. So the other day, when she shared with me that she sometimes feels like an imposter, even now, after so much time in the program, I felt happy and smiled. Also, I must admit, I rushed to share with her my own experiences with feeling like an imposter. I talked about how I felt in the first few months I was in the program, as well as more recent times. I am always in awe of how aware my friend is about herself and what she is going through, how she processes her feelings and then sets about working her program. Some time ago, she gave me a list of affirmations that I use for mirror work when I'm brushing my teeth and shaving in the morning. It is one of the key contributions she has made to my continuing to do the work. She has a process that basically consists of her being willing to think about events in her life and to see the world around her with the intention to be loving and forgiving. It is a wonderful, full-spectrum view of life that is both internal and external, which is easy to say, but something that takes effort to do. Trust me, I know. I've been working on my own imitation of her method for months. Like anything in program, the more we put into it, the more we get out of it. Which, by the way, is a variation of my Rule 33 from my personal rules I have been developing during my time in recovery. One day I'll have to make episodes that explore the meaning behind each of my rules, as well as the circumstances under which the rules were formed. But for now, let's get back on topic. Like I said, when my friend shared how she feels like an imposter sometimes, I immediately said that I feel that way too, especially when it comes to the religious and spiritual elements of the program. Now, to be clear, I have faith and I have spirituality, but I also have a strong practicality in that I know that change only comes if I work for it. If I make the effort. The episodes for this podcast only get done if I spend time working on the scripts, schedule time for recording and editing, and maintain my willingness to stick to my schedule. All this takes effort. My food plan and action plan, which define my abstinence and help me progress towards my goals, are only effective if I am willing to plan out my food, schedule time for meetings, my exercise, and work on my writing. Willingness is the beginning, but following through, doing the work, matters. That's the right stuff, as they used to say about people chosen to be astronauts. If I plan and follow through with my eating, my exercise, and I am honest with my sponsor and food accountability buddy, then I will be effective. It is one day at a time, but also requires intent and strategy. I am not inert. I am not passive. To paraphrase a cloud that I have great respect for, when we are feeling blah, whether it is a feeling in our body or in our spirit, there are always steps that we can take to feel not blah anymore. We can have a willingness to be nice to ourselves. That is a wonderful and encouraging virtue of this program. Over time, we hold less judgment and regret towards ourselves and towards our mistakes. We humanize ourselves, and not just other people. Yes, a very wise cloud indeed. We all should strive to humanize ourselves. I know I make an active effort to not see myself as a monster, even though I was called such a thing many, many times by people who were strangers to me and people who were known to me, even people I gave my trust and affection to. I think it is a good thing that we feel faith in ourselves as well as for others. We need to know that even when we act mean, or are at our worst, or when we are most in pain, that we also have a huge capacity to love and forgive. We can be better. We can be kinder. That too is very human. And just to quote the wise cloud one more time, every person has the right to be judged by their best moment. Which, to me, is a reminder that we need to see ourselves through loving, admiring eyes. Eyes that see the goodness and the virtue within us. Yeah, that fearless inventory we all take of ourselves when we work the steps is only effective if we are completely honest, which can feel like a brutal task. But after the inventory is over, we need to take off those critical eyeglasses we use to look at ourselves and see more than the faults we want higher power to remove from our souls. The other day, I was looking through my old journal entries and I came to the one for November 1st, 2020, exactly 1 year ago at the time of this episode's publication. When I wrote that entry, I had 42 days of continuous abstinence, and I had been in program for just over 2 months. 10 days earlier, I had made my second attempt to find a sponsor in the program because people in meetings were continuing to pressure or encourage, depending on your point of view, but speaking for myself, at the time, it felt like pressure. Anyway, people were pressuring me to find a sponsor, but that second attempt did not go well. In fact, the journal entry for October 20th is rather heated in my choice of language I used, so I won't share it here. But the November 1st entry is very relevant to today's topic. Here is what I wrote. I have been thinking about last night's meeting, and I realize that I'm still mad about my attempt to find a sponsor. I am still upset about how the conversation went, and now I realize that, yes, I was busy last week, but also part of what kept me away from going to meetings was how mad I was at that guy and how much he made me feel like I didn't belong, that I am not welcome. So when I went to the meeting last night, and I shared, I was more scared of saying the wrong thing than when I came to my first meeting. Like if I said the wrong thing, that I'm going to be thrown out and told not to come back. I'm processing that anger still today. I'm feeling it, meditating on it, and letting it go. And there's also a fear that I'll always be amongst the crowd, but not part of the crowd. Invisible, but seen. Present, but excluded. And I am acknowledging today that that fear and perception of my life experiences is one of the things that drives me to overeat for comfort. But it doesn't get to drive me anymore. So today, I have been soul-searching on my journey to lose weight, have spiritual growth, and find recovery. I won't call it a struggle, not today. I am not seeing what I am feeling and thinking as an adversarial process, hence why I won't call it a struggle. It is a journey, my journey. And even as I acknowledge and process this anger and fear and work to expel both from my mind, I can look out the metaphorical window on this journey of mine and see how beautiful life is. That's the end of the journal entry. Hard to believe that that is where I was 1 year ago, and yet I am so grateful to have made all the progress that I have made and know that I will complete the second half of the journey in 2 more years. Let me tell you a little bit more about when I feel like an imposter. Sometimes I'm in a meeting and someone will say that God or higher power did everything for them. I cringe. Inwardly, I really, really do. I try not to. Now, I'm not judging that person. I don't resent them, and I would never censor them. I am speaking now only for myself and sharing that those types of statements make me feel like an imposter. Yes, I pray every day to the higher power of my choosing. Yes, my parents raised me with a religious faith, but we never attended church. I was taught to think critically for myself, to evaluate and decide what had meaning for me. So when I surrender character defects and resentments to my higher power, I am turning over those burdens to a being that is greater than I am, who I call God and think of as being in heaven. But my prayer each day is one to be sustained, not fixed. This is my prayer. I say, please, God, sustain me. If you will sustain me, then I can do the work. In all honesty, there are many reasons why I perceive my relationship with higher power in this manner. However, the one that always pops to the forefront of my thoughts when I think about my reliance on God comes from the first novel I ever read from cover to cover on my own. That book is called Where the Red Fern Grows. Now, if you haven't read it, I do recommend it. Without getting too far into the plot or offering any spoilers, let me say that the story is about a young boy who wants to own 2 dogs. He prays and prays to God to send him 2 dogs, but the dogs never come. One day, his grandfather tells him that God hasn't sent him the dogs yet because he's not meeting God halfway. After thinking about this, the boy concludes that the act of meeting God halfway means that he needs to earn the money to pay for the dogs. And God's part is to give the boy the strength and determination to stay the course and save the money. Thus, sustained by God, the boy works many jobs and saves his money until he has enough to buy the dogs. One last side note before I get back to our main topic. I mentioned earlier that I have a number of personal rules, and Rule 29 seems relevant to how I perceive my relationship with my higher power. Rule 29 states, "What is given can be quickly taken away. That which is earned is yours forever." Or, to put it another way, you reap what you sow. Within my Rule 29 lives the philosophy of meeting God halfway, and my prayer to my higher power is one that asks that he sustain me so that I may do the work that is necessary to change my life. Getting back on track, Something else that makes me feel like an imposter is when I come up against a resentment that I am inexperienced at inventorying. You see, one of the things that happens as we live in the state of serenity and recovery is that we become better versions of ourselves, and consequently we venture into new life experiences. What once seemed impossible becomes not only possible, but actualized. And with that comes unfamiliar challenges. Which makes sense because it's new. So naturally, being human, we make mistakes from time to time. But wait, I say to myself, I'm living in serenity and recovery. Shouldn't it all just be good? That question is an echo of all those childhood cartoons and stories that ended with, "And they lived happily ever after." But the real living happily ever after means living a life on a day-to-day basis, one that is productive and filled with challenges to be faced and overcome. Thus, we become stronger and happier. At least that's how it is for me. And when I screw up, I feel like an imposter, especially when I screw up in a way that I didn't see coming. So what should we do when we feel like an imposter? Well, it is worth pointing out that according to Tradition 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. And that if you have that desire to work on yourself and your eating habits, then you are not an imposter. But let me elaborate further and say that if you feel like an imposter because you are not hearing your story in meetings, then perhaps those are not the right kind of meetings for you, and you need to branch out and try different intergroups. One of the blessings of online virtual meetings is that we have easy access to a wide variety of meeting types with people from all around the world. If you are open and honest when seeking a place that resonates with recovery for you, then after a little trial and error, you will find places where you hear your story and other people's shares. That connection, that knowing that we are not alone when it comes to our fears, our trials, and our character defects, is perhaps the greatest proof that we are not imposters. We compulsive eaters are famous for feeling like we don't belong anywhere, but that is false. We do belong. We are worthy of happiness and joy in this life. Working the steps helps us find the truth. What truth, you ask? Your truth. The truth that matters most to you. The truth that will help you change your life for the better. And if you need further elaboration on your personal truth, then I refer you to the previous episode of Recovery Buddies with David. To any of you listening right now, if you are being honest with yourself and feel that you are a compulsive eater, and you have the willingness to work for recovery, to work on becoming a better person, then you are not an imposter. But when that time comes and you question yourself, then approach that feeling of being an imposter with curiosity, not judgment. Talk about it with someone, or write about it in your journal. Ask yourself, why do you feel like an imposter? Do you feel like you aren't being truthful in meetings? Do you feel like you don't belong? Those thoughts that say, I'm not good enough or sick enough to be in or need OA. That's the disease talking and doing all it can to keep us sick. If you have any thoughts regarding food that you do not feel are healthy or normal, then you are in the right place. In this program, we try to minimize self-doubt so that we can heal and grow stronger. Again, I remind you and myself that Tradition 3 states, the only requirement to attend OA is a desire to stop eating compulsively. If you have slipped, relapsed, or made a mistake, that does not matter. If you have that desire spoken of in Tradition 3, then you are not an imposter, and you are welcome in OA. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode. I thank you for listening and hope that you enjoyed what I had to say. Remember, dear listener, you, me, and everyone in this fellowship is worthy of recovery. You can have a relationship with food that leads to a healthy body. You are worthy of that. All it takes is time, consistency, and willingness. I'll talk to you next time, buddy. You've been listening to HP3R, Higher Power Ranger Recovery Radio. All recovery, all the time. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing to the podcast and leaving a review. If you'd like to send us an email, then write to hp3rpodcast@gmail.com. Remember to tune in on Thursdays for episodes of Daily Dose of Recovery, and check back on Mondays for future episodes of Recovery Buddies with David, here on HP3R.